Mr.
Hello, WGN listening audience.
Live from the biggest small town in America, it's the Saturday Night Special with Amy Goode. Yeah.
WGN. This week on the Saturday Night Special, we are taking a look at volunteerism and philanthropy. But you know what? I do not necessarily mean the philanthropy type, like Bill Gates Foundation level stuff, but rather the kind of giving that we can all do, sometimes through resources, other times through effort or time, and sometimes simply by showing up for those who need us. A favorite quote of mine, one I'm sure you've heard many times, is attributed to Mother Teresa, and it goes like this: do not wait for leaders. Do it alone, person by person. No doubt the quote overlooks the power of community organizing and how much even small groups of people can accomplish when determined and committed. But the quote does speak to the importance of taking situations moment by moment and responding compassionately and with a giving heart in whatever way we are each able to do so in a given moment. It encourages us to act, and it reminds us that we have more power to create change person by person, one at a time, than perhaps any of us realize. Because while superheroes might save the world all at once, for us mere mortals, saving the world means doing what we each can, alongside others doing the same. And indeed, every action no doubt counts, and it all adds up. And that's all good, and we're going to talk about it tonight. But let's be real. Time is at a premium for everyone, and there are thousands of organizations competing for our time and our attention, and sometimes causes seem like a great idea, only later we realize they aren't all that they are cracked up to be, or maybe that we could have done more. So digging deeper, sometimes good intentions don't truly help the people they're aiming to serve necessarily, and they really only succeed in making volunteers feel good about volunteering. So tonight we're going to talk about how to be smart and strategic about the organizations that we support and how to avoid good intentions that can sometimes be harmful to the very populations they aim to help. I'll be joined by WGN radio regular Lisa Dietlin, CEO of Institute of Transformational Philanthropy, and by Dr. Noelle Sullivan, cultural and medical anthropologist from Northwestern University. That is all coming up tonight on the Saturday Night Special on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Heads up, we have a little bit shorter show tonight. We're going to get you to that Hawks pregame at 8:30, so I'm out of here 30 minutes early and not at 9 o'clock, so sorry to break your heart with that news, but it'll be all good, and then we'll get you on to that Hawks game coming up right after that. So, plenty to do. In the meantime, though, we have a big show planned for you all about volunteerism and philanthropy and just how we can do a little bit better. There's so much to work on here in our world. I think we can all agree on that. And, you know, I have realized that almost every single year, sometime at the top of the year, I have brought in our next guest, and that is our good friend Lisa Dietlin. She is the president and CEO of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy. Hi, Lisa. So good to see you.
Hey, Amy. Happy New Year. Belated.
Happy. You know, I feel like this year, I've seen some people say this. It didn't even start till February 1st.
Okay, good. Then so, Happy New Year.
So we're just getting going here. So it's all good. Well, you do so much wonderful work through your organization, and you've always given us such really great practical solutions to be a little more engaged and do so thoughtfully and well. And so we've talked about in years past about making a charitable plan and things like that. But what is really what is kind of up on your radar this year on the topic of philanthropy?
don't forget what happened in 2017. You know, 2017 was a year of disasters. And whether you think about the Las Vegas shooting, or you think about the hurricanes that hit, or you think about the flooding in California, or the fires, or what have you, you know, it's really the year. 2018 is don't forget. I mean, we don't need something shiny and new. We have a lot of things that we have not yet solved, taken care of, that are still in recovery, and reaching back and helping those individuals. I was reminded, I was sharing with you that I was in Tucson a couple weeks ago, and one of the women that was at this party that I was at shared that it was actually her nephew's wife that was the woman that was shot in the head that was just released from the hospital. And they had learned that she was going to be able to walk. But here it is. And I thought, oh my gosh, I forgot about Vegas. Mm-hmm. I forgot about the Vegas shooting. And her family was dealing with it because they were so happy she was finally coming home.
Sure.
But yet
we've moved on to three other disasters.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or what can I do? So it's really important to me that in 2018, we remember what happened in 2017 and that we make sure that we've shored that all up.
That is very good advice. And so I want to touch on that charitable plan of action because that's something you talk about a lot. And I think it's so good because it really makes it feel very doable to kind of sit down at the beginning of the year and really just kind of think about what your plan is, which I think is valuable, even if you just have, you know, limited time and money you want to do something.
Right. And most of us do have limited time and money. Even those of us who are ultra wealthy will come to me and say, my time and even my resources are limited. So two things I always recommend. One is make a charitable plan of action. But also, too, don't be so rigid that you don't have that little bit of extra room, both time-wise and money-wise, for those unanticipated asks. So what do I mean by a charitable plan of action? Do a couple things. Sit down, maybe this weekend, next weekend, maybe while you're getting ready for the Super Bowl tomorrow, and think about what did you give to last year? What was really important to you? Some of us, it was about the hurricane. Some of us, it was about the shootings or the floods or the fires or what have you. Some of us, maybe our favorite aunt got breast cancer. Or we adopted and rescued a pet from a disaster. And all of a sudden, animals and taking care of animals. One of my friends, Colleen, did that. You know, she started taking classes or courses at PAWS in order to better take care of animals. And, you know, she got pulled right into that. She works a lot and travels a lot and couldn't take care of an animal on her own, but she can definitely volunteer. And that became part of her commitment in 2017. So think about what you did in 2017. What did you care about? And then think about, what are you really passionate about? Do you like to hike, walk, build things with your hands, take care of animals, interact with seniors, interact with children? What do you really like to do? And then think about maybe what came on your radar new, that maybe you have Puerto Rican relatives. Maybe you're from Puerto Rico and you really want to make sure that the recovery phase that they're in happens. And then what do you have to spend in terms of money and time? And if it's, you know, $100 a month, do you want to give $100 to one organization or 25 to four? You know, my thought is give more to fewer, but that's not everybody's cup of tea. And then also think about your time. Our time is our most precious commodity. Most people think it's money, but it really is our time. And I was shocked in getting ready for the show. I always like to, you know, get the numbers together. And I learned that we're still only at 25% of Americans volunteering. That means 75% of us aren't getting off the couch and volunteering. There's more that we can do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was redoing some reading on that very topic a little bit and even talking with esteemed producer Tom Hush on this very topic about how do we troubleshoot. I think sometimes people are overwhelmed with this sense of apathy of like, well, there's nothing I can do that's going to make a difference.
Right.
How do we address that? How do we troubleshoot it and kind of change the narrative there?
Well, I think first of all, realize that you can make a difference. And you know, I've said in the past, it can be as easy as a smile, paying for somebody's coffee in line, letting somebody cut in front of you in a car merging situation, putting money in a meter for somebody. It can be that simple. Every one of us can do something, and it doesn't have to be a big, gigantic, I'm going to undertake this arduous task. But I also think get your friends and family involved. I just learned from one of my friends, Dana, that her youngest son with his friends once a month make a meal for Ronald McDonald houses.
Isn't that nice?
And I'm like, oh my gosh. And she's so proud of them, and they're learning to cook. And because they're all in it together, you know, it's like exercise. You know, if you have a sure. buddy that shows up at your front door, you're going walking.
Yeah, you
if
can't buddy, flake.
If the buddy doesn't show up, you're like, oh, let me hit that snooze again. Yeah. Let me roll over. So I think, you know, get some friends together. I have a friend in Vegas that I do see often on Facebook posting, you know, with she and her sister and others, that they're cooking at some sort of pantry or soup kitchen, and they do it once a month. So get your family and friends involved. Make that commitment. You know, the one thing that our parents always say to us is, I'd love to spend more time with you. Why not get mom and say, you know, once a month, instead of just going to eat or going to a movie or, you know, trying to figure out shopping or what we're going to do, we're going to go volunteer. And I'm going to pick it this month and you pick it next month. And actually have that apathy not be even relevant to the conversation.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I also like your point about looking back at where you gave, because I think sometimes that can be a blur, especially when we have disasters.
Right.
You have to kind of look back and go, okay, what did happen? Where did I give? What happened? And because sometimes it's when it's an immediate response.
Right.
And
it's overwhelming.
Right.
Well, if you remember, you know, Harvey and Irma hit, and then we had the relief for Harvey, you know, when we had all of the telethon, and then Irma had come ashore. Sure, you know, and all of a sudden you have other folks, Mark Anthony and Jennifer Lopez and Alex Rodriguez heading up that for the Caribbean. And then all of a sudden you're hearing about the fires in California and then the mudslide.
Then Hurricane Maria comes in and then Nate, and it just kept going.
Oh my gosh, it just keeps going and going. And you can't get, you know, we're studying right now disaster fatigue. You know, how much, where's that tipping point where people are like, oh my gosh, I don't have another $25 I can give.
Yeah.
I don't have another $100 I can give. It is so overwhelming, the enormity, and it just doesn't stop.
Yeah. I think, too, sometimes it seems hard to figure out, especially, say, a moment of a disaster, there's so many organizations responding.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's very difficult to say, I think that's another word, do I want to give $10 to three places or $30 to one place when you want to be impactful? But then also, you want to know how your money's being used.
Correct. And we're living in an era where transparency is so critical to donors. It used to be they just trusted the brand. If it was the American Red Cross or the Salvation Army or Habitat for Humanity, well, they must be doing good. And of course, over the years, we've seen scandals that happen with those nonprofit organizations that perhaps had leadership that wasn't following the rules or as ethical as we would have hoped they would have been, or maybe they had a different plan. American Red Cross has come under fire because at times they hold money back. If you understand their plan, which is, yes, we need immediate relief, but that's not the only relief. There's, you know, the rescue, the rescue, the relief, and then the recovery. Rescue, get you out of harm's way. Relief, make sure you've got food, clothing, and shelter. And then there's a recovery long term. But people just see the immediate need. And so the strategy's good, but the communication was bad. And so they take a hit for that. I think you got to look now in these days, whether you want a macro viewpoint, nonprofit, or a micro, macro or micro. Obviously, the big guns, you know, the ones that I've just named, as well as a host of others, oftentimes take a macro approach, that they're at the top leadership level and they're helping at the big level. What we saw with these disasters in the fall and during hurricane season is many people wanted to go micro. They wanted mm-hmm. to go and know that that medical van got into that community, that that school got fixed, that that house got repaired, that that coffee shop, you know, was open to serve the first responders. They wanted to go micro. So I think that's one thing our listeners could think about when you're thinking about giving. Is it a macro approach? You know, that, gosh, I trust. I know I don't know enough about disaster relief and recovery and what is Lisa talking about, but I know the American Red Cross does, and I know the Salvation Army does, and I know United Way does. Or is it like, gosh, you know, I came from this little town in California, and I saw that it caught on fire, and 60% of the residents had to leave, and I care about that community, so I'm going to search and find out what fund has been set up to help those residents.
Right. And I think that's a really, really important point. We're going to be talking about that a little bit more later in the program, too, about when dealing with communities, really finding out what the community needs, because sometimes what we believe a community needs is not what the community needs, especially when we're talking about intercultural issues.
Absolutely.
That can be really, really, in fact, damaging and wasteful. Mm-hmm. You know. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit later. We are joined by Lisa Dietlin. She is president and CEO of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy, and she always brings us lots of good information. We're talking all about volunteering and philanthropy tonight. So we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Tonight, as ever, we pick one big topic and we spend all evening talking about it. And tonight, that topic is volunteering and philanthropy and really making a difference, because as we're, I say stepping into the new year like it's not already February, but it's all good.
It's here.
So we're talking about how we can really do good work in the year ahead and have an impact with the work that we do. And so we have our friend Lisa Dietlin with us. She is president and CEO of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy. Look them up online. They are doing really, really great work. Whenever, you know, we always bring Lisa in when we want to talk about this topic, because you have so much information and you have done so many interesting projects about that. I want to shift a little bit when we think about the act of volunteering and doing charitable acts and giving money or time or whatever. We talked a little bit about kind of how to overcome the apathy or I could never make a difference. It's too big a problem. But what do you think it is that gets people moving, and like, what is that call? Like, how do you, you know what I mean? That makes someone go, I need to do this. I need to be involved. I need to write a check or give some time or give whatever.
Well, you know, there's actually been scientific studies done that show there's like these endorphins that get released and you get this high, you know, that there's actually a high, whether it's making a financial donation or volunteering your time, that act of being selfless and helping somebody or something, or an animal, or cleaning up a river, or restoring a museum, or a temple, or a house, or building a house, or whatever that is, actually getting out of your own way and doing something for others has really lifelong lasting benefits, including better health. I mean, people don't believe it, but when you volunteer, studies have been done that volunteers have better health. They live longer. They have less depression. And Adam Grant is this professor out in Pennsylvania, and he wrote this book, Give or Take. And it was a study of, in return, do givers, takers, or matchers get more out of life? Meaning, if I give unconditionally, what do I get in return? Or if I'm a taker, you know, we all have those people that we avoid like pariah at parties. Or those matchers, like, I'll do this if you do that for me. And the research shows that givers get back, you know, tenfold. You know, if you believe in any of the sayings, you know, I think about Christianity in the Bible, and they say, you know, if you reap what you sow, you get it back tenfold. It's really true. And it starts with volunteering, getting out of your own way and helping someone else.
Yeah, which is not to say like being a martyr about it. I think it has to come from the right place.
Absolutely. You know, I was going to meet some friends for breakfast a couple of weeks ago, and it was one of those really cold, bitter mornings. So it's a Saturday, and I was going down the alley behind my house, and there's this young man coming out of the gate, you know, into the alley to walk. And obviously, he was going to the L. I live about four blocks from the L. And I got to the corner and I turned. I thought, Lisa Dietlin, it is so freaking cold out. Put the Jeep in reverse. And I backed up. And my mother would be terrified that I did this. And I said, hi. I said to this guy, do you want a ride? He goes, oh my God, it's so cold. So he hops in my Jeep. Now, most people, listeners, are probably panicked. But in Chicago, we are a big, small town. And I said, you're going to the alley. He goes, yeah, oh my God, that would be so great. It's so cold out. And I go, and he was bundled up well. And I said, yes. And found out he's from Michigan. I'm from Michigan. We had this great conversation. It was four blocks long. But, you know, when I dropped him off, I was in such a good mood because I had done something. I didn't expect to do it. It wasn't being a martyr. It was truly sharing. I've got a warm car. You're walking. It's cold. You know, and I don't recommend it to everybody.
Right. Listeners, but I could see this breaking badly for some people.
But the point is, it made me in a really good mood that morning as I went to my breakfast with my friends.
Sure, sure. Well, yeah. There's some research that you've brought to my attention about the health benefits of volunteering. There's also some that Harvard has done that really these studies match so wonderfully. Yes. And it's really all about these positive health benefits that I don't think we know much about that are really interesting, about lowering blood pressure, helping to kind of not necessarily cure, but certainly take the edge off of like cyclical depression, things like that, that were throughout these studies that are really fascinating.
It is fascinating. And I think we discount that that effect of volunteering, of neighbor helping neighbor, person helping stranger, friend helping friend. I mean, people say to me all the time, how can I help? What can I do? And I say, it doesn't have to be with a stranger, like the example I just gave. One of my friends goes and sits with her friend who's having chemo treatment. She just sits there. And sometimes she reads to her out of a book she's reading. Sometimes they play cards. Sometimes they watch television. But she just goes and sits with her.
Yeah.
That's volunteering. That's helping. And she knows her. It's not a stranger. I have a really good friend who, when she lived here, would go to Northwestern Hospital and was trained and would hold the babies that were in the NICU. She loves babies. That just fed her soul. When you would see Liz after her session in the hospital, it would be amazing. There are benefits, and benefits that we don't even yet know about, that help us to be a better person by volunteering.
Right. I mean, even the data point about blood pressure alone is so big, because that's going to contribute to, like heart disease, stroke, all kind of things come out of having high blood pressure.
Right.
Like if you can, do it. Like that, right. Seems like such an easy one.
It is. And, I have written about this in many of my books and articles about the fact that when you volunteer, you don't know what's going to happen, who you're going to meet, what's going to happen. Suling Jin, who was, the founder of Flying Food Fair and has since passed away. But I remember meeting her and she told me the story. I said, how did you ever come up with this idea of, putting food on air, pitching to the airlines? How did you ever come up with that? She said, well, Lisa, when I started my company, I was a caterer and I didn't have much money, but I always wanted to give back. So I started volunteering with nonprofits. And at this one nonprofit I volunteered, they set me next to the CEO of United Airlines. And she just started talking to him. She'd volunteered. They sat, the seating at the gala sat her next to him. And next thing you know, her food is on United Airlines. Her company has a contract with them. And so, you reap what you sow. She was giving back. She didn't have any resources. She was a caterer. And she pitched the idea.
Doesn't hurt to ask.
No.
Don't ask, don't get, right? For sure. And then so let's shift a little to the economic value of volunteering, because I think that is a part that we think of philanthropy being write the check, that is what it means, and
right,
the organization can use that. And I think a lot of organizations will say, 75 cents of every dollar goes to the
right.
pets or whatever. And we think of it in very stark terms, but is the act of volunteering more measurable than we think it is economically?
Yes. Actually, there are organizations, the independent sector among them, that actually measure it. And now they say that every hour of volunteering, on average, is worth $23.56. So if you think about volunteering, you're actually giving a $23.56 gift to the organization. Obviously, if you have higher skills, like you're an attorney, an accountant, a graphic artist, those numbers might skew higher. But on average, $23, $24 an hour. That's what your volunteer hour is worth. And for many of us, if we volunteer 4 hours, that's $100 that we're actually giving to the organization in terms of our time. The average person in this country volunteers only about 36 hours a year. So that's 3 hours a month. $75, though. $75 every month that you would be giving. Now, if I sat there and said to you, Amy, could you write a $1,000 check, which is about $83 a month, but could you write a $1,000 check? Most of us would say, well, I don't know. I got other causes. My house of worship. I have this. I have that. But if I said to you, hey, how about you meet me the third Saturday of the month before your show? It's right across the street. We're going to volunteer. We're going to volunteer from 4 to 7. You'd be doing the same thing.
Much easier to say yes to that.
Right.
Much easier, much easier. We're talking with Lisa Dietlin. She's president and CEO of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy. The show tonight, we're talking all about volunteering and philanthropy and making our world a little bit better, but doing so thoughtfully, mindfully, in a way that really has the most possible impact. So we're 720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. As ever, we've taken one big old topic and we're talking about it all night with very, very smart people. Tonight, we're talking about volunteering and philanthropy, and we have Lisa Dietlin with us. She's president and CEO of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy, which does amazing work, and you should look them up and follow them online and follow her and all of those good things. So, Lisa, as we are counting down the hours to kick off for Super Bowl tomorrow, there is an overlooked aspect of Super Bowl that is really fascinating that is connected to volunteering.
Absolutely. It is one of the largest, if not the largest, volunteer activities in America. Most people don't realize that the Super Bowl has 10,000 volunteers. It needs 10,000 volunteers. There are 10,000 volunteers right now in Minnesota, freezing, a little bit colder.
Bless them. I hope they're bundled.
That are volunteering to help the Super Bowl. And people say to me, wait, what do you mean? And it's not volunteering in the stadium tomorrow. They don't get tickets. Don't think of that. But it's volunteering for the 10 days leading up to any Super Bowl. What it's about is helping the host committee. It's a huge economic boost to have the Super Bowl. And you obviously want to make a good impression. And in Minnesota this weekend, they're expecting a million people to come, whether they're actually going into the stadium or watching it, you know, from the local downtown bars and pubs and party areas. They need greeters. They need people who can help those guests that are coming into Minnesota, many of them for the first time, get around. And so there's some requirements, but as you might suspect, it's all closed off for this Super Bowl, but you can sign up for Super Bowl 53, which is in Atlanta. So it'll be a little bit
much warmer
at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Excuse me. But it is an amazing opportunity to give back and to volunteer.
Sounds like it. That's not a thing we think of. We think of volunteer being giving blood or responding to a disaster or something, but making people feel welcome and navigate safely and help.
And getting people from the airport to the hotel, or getting people from, you know, the hotel to the stadium, or making sure questions are answered and making sure that you're assisting the host committee. As you might suspect, especially with a heightened state of awareness to any people who might be trying to disrupt the game tomorrow, you know, there's a lot of needs. There's a lot of moving parts, and the host committee needs a lot of helping hands. So those of you who are football fans and want to be part of the action and in the midst of it, obviously there are requirements you have to do. Like for this year with the Minnesota host committee, you had to do 3 shifts. Each shift was 6 hours, but it's over a 10-day stretch. You had to be above 18 years of age, but you get the t-shirt, the polo, the backpack, the jacket, you get all the paraphernalia, and it's a great bonding experience.
Sure, and I imagine you feel quite official running around being like, I'm with the Super Bowl, but totally not an athlete.
Right. Maybe you and I should try that for Atlanta.
Let's do it.
Next year.
We're on it. Yeah, okay. Definitely Atlanta.
We're not going to Minnesota.
So as we are unfortunately counting down the clock here, we're starting to run out of time already, but what are some things that people can do? You know, it doesn't, as I was saying in the opening monologue about that Mother Teresa quote, that's do it alone, you know, don't wait for leaders, just do something. What are you always have such good ideas of ways to get involved and ways to be impactful, even in small gestures. Parting thoughts on that?
Well, a couple of things. One, I would say if you're partaking in the Super Bowl tomorrow, there's things that you can do. For the Super Bowl specifically, you know, take time, ask everybody to bring a dish. That's a way of volunteering. They can create something. They can bring it. They can be part of it. Don't stretch yourself out by making everything. Also, I recommend talk about your favorite charities. Maybe put, everyone likes to gamble, or put a bet on it. Maybe put a jar for the two teams, you know, the Eagles and
the Patriots.
The Patriots. Oh my God, my brain just went dead there.
So you're watching Puppy Bowl
and put two jars out and have people put the money in, and whatever team wins, it goes to, you know, who's ever leading the charge about that favorite
charity. I've seen that at an event before, and it was really fun. There was two, let's see, how did it go? It was two different jars, and you had to put your money in the jar. They were decorated, so right. It was like, put the money in that jar. And then I think it was predetermined. Like, if Team A wins, it's going to
this charity,
the, you know, Humane Society. If Team B wins, it's going to, you know, the food bank or whatever.
Right, and that could be a fun thing to do. But if you're not into the Super Bowl, or you're thinking, Lisa, Amy, get off the Super Bowl, move on, I want to think about how I can volunteer. You know, you can do things like visit a shut-in. You know, at this time of year when it's a little bit cold and you're living in a northern climate, there are neighbors who might not be able to get out. My sister fell 2 weeks ago and broke 3 bones in her ankle, and so she's shut in.
Yeah.
And, you know, go visit friends like that, or, you know, accompany people who to their chemo sessions or their doctor's appointments or what have you. Obviously, the VA, we talk a lot about the military, you know, go to VA hospitals, call ahead and make sure you know what the requirements are. You can't just show up often on the doorstep. Obviously, there are children's hospitals here in Chicago, and there's oftentimes activities around children. There's nonprofits or activities with children.
I love your friend's idea of cooking for the Ronald McDonald House. That's
absolutely
a great idea.
There's a way to do that.
You know, and for visiting, you know, a friend of mine, and she wouldn't, I've told this story in the air before, so I have her blessing to do so. A friend of mine had breast cancer a few years ago, and a friend of ours called her and said, I bought this pink ribbon thing that supports breast cancer research, letting you know. And she said, that's great. I am appreciative that you did that. But you know what I really need? I can't lift the laundry basket.
Yeah.
Can you come help me with that? That would be huge.
Isn't that amazing?
And that became their thing. She came over once a week and would help her, like, lift the laundry and do that. Like, I got you on that one.
And, you know, in this time, tomorrow we're expecting a snowstorm here in Chicago. Shovel your neighbor's walk. Don't end at your sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know, take those extra couple steps. You know, do that. It's going to help your health in more ways than one. I mean, we were just sharing about the benefits of volunteering. That's a volunteer activity.
Except for my neighbor who gets mad because he feels emasculated when I've done this.
Okay. Well, there's that part.
But I got a whole thing going there.
But, you know, there's so many things. Take a meal to somebody who give a couple. Maybe there's a newborn baby and it's been colicky and the couple is about ready to pull out their hair, the new parents, you know, give them a night off. You know, go and say you'll take care of that baby for a couple hours so that they can have a night off. Make them a meal. Maybe that's a de-stressor, you know. We all have had friends. I had a friend, and she passed away a year ago, January 2nd. Wonderful, wonderful woman, worked in food banking in Texas. And I couldn't figure out what to do. I mean, my heart broke. And every couple of days, I sent her a card. Every couple of days, I have blank note cards. And I would just talk nonsense, it seemed to me, about my life. Hi, how are you? This is what I'm doing. It's snowing in Chicago again. Oh, I was at the Cubs game. Oh, I was. And her family after told me how much she looked forward to receiving those cards. All of us can put pen to paper. I mean, she couldn't read on the computer. You know, her eyesight was going what? But all of us can put pen to paper. Buy some blank stationery. Put a note in the card. Be, you know, a note in the envelope and send the card and just say, I'm thinking about you. And then after she passed, I did it for a while for her daughter and her husband. So that it wasn't like, okay, she's gone, I forgot about you. There are so, is that volunteering? I think it is. Is that philanthropy, helping your fellow man? Absolutely. All of us can do something. We can smile. We can pay for the coffee for the person behind us. Stopping and getting a coffee, ask your colleague if they want a coffee. Text them. Pick up a lunch for everybody at the office. All of that helps people be better in their day because you did something kind for them.
Fair enough. So in summation, be cool.
Be cool. We all can be cool.
Be nice. Look out for people.
And, you know, we're waving to people here. I have to close. I had an Uncle Isidore Aloysius Vicarius, a very Polish man. Uncle Isidore. And Uncle Isidore always waved to people because he had this truck on the country road. And I'd say, do you know him, Uncle Isidore? And sometimes he did and sometimes he didn't. But I bumped in when I was kayaking on the river with a friend to this young man, and he was telling me his life story. And when he found out I did philanthropy, he goes, "Oh my God." He said, "My friend Billy says, my roommate Billy," he was his roommate, said, "I can't afford to give money, but every day I wave at somebody, I smile at someone, or I say hi," because he had read somewhere that the number one reason people who are contemplating suicide don't do it is because somebody smiled at them, somebody said hi, somebody acknowledged them. He said, "Do you think Billy's making a difference, Lisa?" And I said, choking back tears, I said, "Yeah, Billy's making a difference. All of us can smile, say hi to somebody, acknowledge somebody. That homeless man in the street, the homeless woman, the stressed out parent in the grocery store, to help make this world a little bit better." And to me, that's volunteering and philanthropy.
Well said. Lisa Dietlin is president and CEO of the Institute for Transformational Philanthropy. Connect with them online. They're doing really magical things, as are you. So follow her on Twitter and Facebook and all those places. Thanks so much for being with us, Lisa.
Loved being here.
Always a pleasure. All right, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. And as ever, we pick one big old topic and we wrestle with it all night and talk about many different aspects of it. Tonight's topic, we are talking about volunteering and philanthropy. And we were with our previous guest, Lisa Dietlin, we were talking all about ways you can be involved and how to mindfully do so and check out the organizations and how it's not even necessarily through an organization, but it's really about just doing the work and meeting people where they're at. Let's shift a bit now. We welcome Dr. Noelle Sullivan to the studio. She is a cultural and medical anthropologist at Northwestern University, and she teaches global health studies. And she has written quite a bit, particularly around volunteering and medical tourism. We've seen those big trips, things like that. There's a lot of focus in her work. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So talk to us a little bit about the span of the work you do. There's a lot there. Cultural and medical anthropology seems like it would cover a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so in anthropology, we're really interested in all things human. And in the case of cultural anthropology, we looking at sort of cultures and the way that they operate. So in my case, I'm really interested in medical cultures. And that you would know a different medical culture if you go to Cook County versus to Prentice Hospital. Mm. They have a very different sort of culture of doing things. And I do that over in Tanzania in East Africa. And so I've been looking at the culture of health facilities in Tanzanian health systems for the last 15 years.
Right. And then we add in the layer of this tourism that on the surface seems like a really great idea. Like, okay, we can have the family vacation in some place and help build an orphanage or volunteer at a hospital or do something like that, which seems like a good idea. But in fact, a lot of what you write about, and you've written for many, many outlets, but a lot of that really touches on how that can, there's a downside to that. And there's a lot of maybe pre-thought that we're not doing going into that.
Right. So I actually stumbled on the medical volunteering aspect of things because in a break between two field seasons, I got back and the whole entire area where I'd been working had been flooded with volunteers. And so I started asking, okay, so what does this mean for this health system that I've spent a long time trying to understand? And in the end, what I've learned after looking at this since 2011 on the ground in practice is that best intentions don't necessarily create best outcomes. And a lot of times our thought that, well, they mean well and the intentions are good is used to sort of shroud a lot of the bad consequences that come from this. And oftentimes volunteers have no idea that they're causing bad outcomes because they leave before they get to see what's going on and they never really understand the culture of where they're working anyway.
So what kind of consequences are we talking about and outcomes that maybe a volunteer would miss?
Sure. So, for instance, if it's someone coming in that doesn't have any medical skills, which is by my estimation about 50% of the volunteers working in Tanzania at least, and certainly more broadly, then they require a whole lot of explanation. So for them, it's much more of a learning experience where they're trying to understand how medicine works in another place. But if they're going to a low-resourced clinic, that's all time that those health practitioners have to spend actually translating and explaining and teaching to these foreigners. And the foreigners really feel like they should get hands-on with the experience as well. So many of them will actually end up doing procedures they shouldn't do at all. And some of these can be very, very graphic. The most common that I see is you'll end up with high school students or, you know, university students with no medical training regularly delivering babies. Another issue is they often crowd out the local health practitioners. So the practitioners will be there in order to be able to deliver babies or provide services. And the volunteers come in waves. So then they just displace the locals that are there trying to do the work. So it ends up being kind of a disaster. And they can also make decisions in the context that aren't really the best decisions for patients because they don't understand that context. So for instance, they can advocate for a particular drug to be prescribed to a patient saying this is the best practice drug for this particular ailment. But a local practitioner will know that that person can't afford that drug or that drug isn't locally available. So they often, in Tanzania, will look at the patient's clothing and shoes to determine their socioeconomic status and then prescribe them some sort of prescription that is available or affordable to them based on that, which ensures they at least get some form of care that's available.
Right. I think that's an important topic that you raise, this idea of working with a local community, especially when we're talking about intercultural issues, because it's very easy to say, well, I know what that person needs. But in fact, that can be really quite a very tricky thing to navigate around the world. And even in our own city, I think sometimes there was a story, I was trying to find it before the program, but a few years ago, there was a homeless man and someone, like after years of interacting with him, gave him a large sum of money thinking this will solve your problems. And but the truth was there were other issues at play. And in fact, having a large sum of money being homeless put a target on your back. And he, you know, there was this story that unfolded around this. And ultimately the donor kind of said, I really thought I was doing the right thing. So much for good intentions. I didn't mean to, you know, potentially harm the guy. And I think that's a lot of what we're talking about here.
Right. And it's particularly tricky, even if you're in such a diverse place as Chicago, to understand what's actually needed is really difficult. It takes some time. So it's not just about having the heart, but also being a critical thinker and humble enough to ask, what is it that you're working towards? And are there ways that I can assist you in doing that? And that sort of translates worldwide. There's a Nigerian novelist, Teju Cole, who coined the term white savior industrial complex. And actually, a lot of people seem to lose the industrial part of that. But the commodification of altruism has become a massive business.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of efforts marketing volunteer placements to people where they'll tell you all the right words that you're looking for. It's sustainable. It's empowering. It deals with vulnerable populations. You can help contribute to solving the world's problems and the sustainable development goals. And it's a $173 billion industry. And that is an estimate based on a statistical analysis done in 2008.
Wow. So much more now,
I'm sure. We have no idea how much of a business this is, and we don't know anything about how that money is spent. And people are buying into these things thinking, oh, any help is better than none at all, not realizing there's lots of things going on in these countries or in these communities, even at home, that locals are actually doing. And instead of finding out what's going on the ground, these organizations are saying, come on in, you are the solution. And that prohibits us from actually looking to find out what are these communities doing for themselves, and are there ways that I can help with the resources they need to be able to achieve their own goals?
Right. Support that as opposed to just swooping in and doing a whole new thing.
Right.
We're talking with Dr. Noelle Sullivan, cultural and medical anthropologist at Northwestern University. We're going to take a quick break and be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. Always grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday evening with me. So tonight's topic, as ever, we just pick one big old thing and start unpacking it all evening with very, very smart people. And this evening, we're talking about volunteering and philanthropy. And right now, we have Dr. Noelle Sullivan in the studio with us. She is a cultural and medical anthropologist at Northwestern University, and she teaches global health studies and really, really fascinating work that you do. We're so glad that you're with us. us tonight to talk with us about it. And so part of your work takes you, as you mentioned, to Tanzania every year to work in medical communities and do this work. And you, in your writing that you do, in particular, I'm thinking of a piece that you wrote at Scientific American specifically about this topic of kind of what's broken about voluntourism and how it could be fixed. But in that piece, you share a lot of interesting experiences that have happened that you've witnessed that are like good intentions, but that go beyond just volunteering, but also kind of the idea of goods donation with good intentions, but that a bit fall flat and don't serve the community.
Right. So I first saw this in 2011, where there was these containers that started showing up at health facilities that were in the area where I was working. And so in 2017, this past summer, I actually asked the hospital administrator for one of these hospitals to open up these containers, which I'd been told were full of all kinds of useless stuff that people had donated with the best of intentions.
So and theoretically, it's like medical supplies.
Theoretically, it's medical supplies. But the idea is it's either medical supplies that you've upgraded and so you're sending the used stuff, or, you know, medical supplies you have in abundance that you can just send. And what ended up happening is they sent a bunch of stuff that was just completely useless to the context. So, for instance, in Tanzania, there's no garbage service. So having disposable medical implements is not a good scene. And so they ended up having tons of disposable tweezers and disposable equipment that they had to burn. They had to have a big bonfire to burn all of this equipment, which is then releasing all the chemicals into the air and all kinds of other problems. But also people have a tendency to throw just all kinds of stuff in this. So there were computers from the 1990s, which of course had no use. There were a bunch of equipment that had no manuals with it that were not actually operational.
What does this do?
Right. Like, you
random
know,
things.
And no sense of what the health facility needs. And so there are those containers that are helpful because they partner and talk to the health facility to find out what it is they need and make sure that they send everything with the equipment that is needed, the batteries, the operations manual, the phone number to contact someone in case the equipment breaks down. Those are really useful. But in one of these containers, we found half-used chemicals that might have actually exploded en route and
oh,
they
sure.
had to figure out how to get rid of. And my favorite was the corset that was in one of these containers. And you're just thinking, you know, what are people thinking? And this is quite common in disasters as well, where Haiti had the earthquake in 2010 and everyone is donating parkas and high heel shoes and, you know, oh, I have stuff, I can just donate it. And any help is better than nothing because it's a disaster. And actually, any help isn't better than nothing. Sometimes nothing is better. And so you have to start with the heart, the desire to want to help, but then, you know, really think critically and talk to people about what is it that's useful in this scenario.
Right, because then you're incurring costs to get rid of this or making people burn medical equipment or things like that.
Right, and the hospital that had opened up those containers, their plan was actually to try to find volunteers to then remove all this equipment so they could sell the containers to be able to pay the fee that they would need to dispose of it as biohazard based on government regulations on how used medical equipment should be disposed of.
And that's a lot of hours.
Loads of hours. And I had actually, those same containers had been there in 2014 and they hadn't been opened. So 3 years later, they were still there.
Still there. And there was, at some point, I think you mentioned there was like a maternity bed or heated.
Yeah,
something.
So this was a group in, I believe it was somewhere in Scandinavia that had donated a bunch of heated maternity beds.
A great idea in Scandinavia.
It's a great idea in Scandinavia, not so great in a tropical country. In addition, even if they had needed something like that, having heated maternity beds on that electrical grid would have just knocked out the entire electrical grid in that village. So they never got used. They were just sitting in a corner gathering dust.
Right. So there's that. So in fact, good intentions don't always pan out. So what is the solution then? And how can we do this kind of work and contribute meaningfully without, you know, incurring costs and damage and things like that to people we're trying to help and serve.
Sure. I think overall, the main rule is really finding out what's needed and not finding it out necessarily by a third party organization, as in the case of voluntourism, but actually ensuring that you're locating organizations that are serving people directly on the ground that can tell you what it is that's needed, realizing that sometimes what we have to do with our own two hands isn't what's most useful, but sometimes it can be. Cleaning up after a disaster is really, really helpful. You don't need tremendous skills to do that. Ensuring that you're not doing anything in another community or with another population or in another country that you would not be permitted to do at home. So if you're not permitted to provide healthcare abroad, don't do it at home. If you're required to get licensure at home, you need licensure abroad. Those kinds of things. And then making sure that you're conscious of vulnerable populations. There's certain populations you should never volunteer with. Orphans are one, and Australia has actually cracked down on orphanage voluntourism and is not permitting it anymore because of the fact that there's been so many abuses and predatory practices amongst orphanages in low-income countries.
Wow.
So there's those. And then looking at the push factors, a lot of people are volunteering to try to get a job to be able to fulfill their resume. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem is that a lot of these institutions have created a market trying to push people to do those kinds of things. And that creates an obligation for students to engage in volunteerism, for instance, to be able to make themselves more competitive. So we need to actually get institutions better understanding how they're contributing to a lot of these egregious practices abroad by requiring that people perform a kind of altruism that may be ethically problematic.
Right, and have to have those clinic hours, things like that,
right,
on your resume in order to even apply to medical school.
Right.
You have given us a lot to think about. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. Noelle Sullivan from Northwestern University. She's a cultural and medical anthropologist and teaches global health studies and writes in tons of outlets. You should connect with her on the social media, Google her, all those things, and read about all the really interesting things she has to say. And if you follow me on social media, I will be sure and share the Scientific American piece that I mentioned in particular that is really all about the trouble with voluntourism. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So here in a bit, we're going to take a break. As I warned you at the top, this is a little bit shorter show than usual because we're going to get you to that Blackhawks pregame, super important, and then coming up at 9, you got that game. So in summation, I'm going to tweet these things out, but also think about what we're doing. Let's try to help each other, but let's do so mindfully and thoughtfully and really make sure we are serving the people we aim to help. That does it for this show. We're going to take a break and turn it over to the Blackhawks pregame here on 720 WGN.